ओम ज्ञानति निरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जन शलाक चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Translation: the creation of the material world begins with the five elements, and thus everything, including the body of a man or a woman, is created of these elements. By the sexual life of man and woman, the number of men and women in this material world is further increased. Purport. When Swayambhuva Manu saw that Dhruva Maharaj understood the philosophy of Vaishnavism and yet was still dissatisfied because of his brother's death, he gave him an explanation of how this material body is created by the five elements of material nature. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is also confirmed, Prakrite Kriyamanani, everything is created, maintained, and annihilated by the material modes of nature. In the background, of course, there is the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Mayadhyakshena. In the 9th chapter, Krishna says, under my superintendence, material nature is acting. Swayambhuva Manu wanted to impress on Dhruva Maharaj that the death of the material body of his brother was not actually the yaksha's fault. It was an act of the material nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has immense varieties of potencies, and they act in different gross and subtle ways. It is by such powerful potencies that the universe is created, although grossly it appears to be no more than the five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Similarly, the bodies of all species of living entities, whether human beings or demigods, animals or birds, are also created by the same five elements, and by sexual union they expand into more and more living entities. That is the way of creation, maintenance, and annihilation. One should not be disturbed by the waves of material nature in this process. Dhruva Maharaj was indirectly advised not to be afflicted by the death of his brother, because our relationship with the body is completely material. The real self, spirit soul, is never annihilated or killed by anyone. Hare Krishna. Yesterday the emperor was giving class. What is the meaning of Sarvabhauma? Means rules over the whole earth. So before beginning his class yesterday, Sarvabhauma said something which I want to discuss a little bit. He said that we should speak simply. When we read it in more difficult language. When we should speak simply. So, that's very good. Prabhupada did that. He gave this complex philosophy in simple language. But I also want to make a case, briefly, before we get onto the Bhagavatam class, that there is also a case. It's not wrong, you could say. I mean, Sarvabhauma Prabhupada wasn't saying that, but there is a way of speaking which is kind more scholarly, Sanskritized, when we're speaking in Hindi or similar languages, and I tend to do that. One reason is because in Hindi I don't know the ordinary language anyway, so I don't know many Urdu words. One thing is that the Sanskrit words, they have more meaning, and they're also very beautiful. They have more meaning, just like we can say in Hindi, Biwi means wife. And I don't know what the etymological derivation of it. It must be Urdu, I presume. But if we say Sahadharmini, people don't say that in normal speech, but it has a much deeper meaning. It has a religious meaning, or Ardangini, or even Stri, or the word used here is Yoshit. What's the etymological derivation of Yoshit? I don't know. Does anyone know? Do you have any Sanskritists here? Stri means just say Vistar Hote, which makes everything bigger. The Brahmachari can live just with his kopins, but when he gets a wife, then Ato griha kshetra sutapta vitaya. Janasya moho yamahammameti. The property tends to expand, and the illusion also. Of course, in devotional life, we could also say that stri is a good wife can help one to expand one's bhakti also. But that's not the... So there's one point, is that the words themselves, they have, they're more meaningful. They're completely integrated with the culture and the philosophy. And another reason to speak in this way is that they're quite beautiful also. They exactly describe Krishna. Yang Shama Sundaram Achintya Guna Swarupam. The language itself is very beautiful and very suitable for describing Krishna. Although definitely simple speaking, as Sarvabhauma Prabhu, we all know, he's very expert in preaching and reaching people heart to heart. So for that, definitely in the beginning stages, it's very useful, especially when we're first making contact with people, to speak in a manner that the communication takes place. But maybe among our devotees who have studied the books more, and then we can also use more of these words which are given by Vyasadeva and the Acharyas, which have very specific philosophical meanings. Alright, that's enough for that. I just wanted to say, I just thought about that and I thought, now, wait a minute, I speak in a kind of difficult way. It's the only way I know, actually. Sorry. So, this verse, Swayambhuva Manu is preaching to Dhruva Maharaj the same principles that Krishna preached to Arjuna, but for a completely different reason. Krishna spoke the same principles to Arjuna, that this material world is temporary, everything here is just a creation of the material elements under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. And Krishna did this to incite Arjuna, who did not want to fight. He incited Arjuna to fight. And here, Swayambhuva Manu is speaking the same philosophy to Dhruva Maharaj to tell him not to fight. Which proves the point for those who want to say that the Bhagavad Gita is promoting violence. It's not promoting violence per se, but it's teaching us how to act properly within this world, and how to act properly, and for what purpose we should act properly in this world, and to act properly in this world for, it may be different for different people under different circumstances. There were so many people on the battlefield who weren't fighting, and they shouldn't fight. They didn't have to be preached to. For each soldier, they didn't have to be preached to not to fight. For each soldier, there must have been so many people, backup staff, cooks, water bearers, then masseurs, doctors. There must have, there was a huge number of soldiers, but there must have been an even bigger number of backup people. So they weren't expected to fight. No one asked them to fight. And nowadays they send even children and women to fight also. But in those days it was strictly Kshatriyas. No one else was supposed to fight. Even Drona, he got sometimes blamed. That because Kshatriyas, one thing they do when they're fighting, they call each other bad names. Or they may do. We find that in Mahabharata. They call each other bad names, or they talk about all the things they may have done. They tell each other the wrong things, and in this way they increase each other's enmity, and they increase their desire to fight with each other. So Drona, he also sometimes got blamed by those, actually not even only the Pandavas. Karna himself was blaming Drona, because they had, even though they were fighting, among the Kauravas especially, there's always some rivalry going on between them. Anyway, between certain ones of them, especially Shalya and Karna. Shalya had a lot of fun when he was driving Karna, calling him all bad names. So, anyway, there were so many people on the battlefield and they weren't fighting and they might have got killed accidentally. The chariot drivers, even though they weren't fighting, they sometimes caught a few arrows accidentally or even purposefully. Looking after the horses. There must have been a lot of people for looking after the horses and the elephants and special doctors for the horses and the elephants and so on. So only the Kshatriyas were fighting and Arjuna didn't want to fight. In this circumstance, he should have fought. In other circumstances, maybe he shouldn't have fought. When he was playing the role of a eunuch, his name was... Anyone? When he was a Naipunsak. Arjuna, what name did he take at that time? Brihannala. So at that time, he shouldn't have fought. During that time, Bhima also did fight. But he was very difficult for Bhima not to fight. But he had to pretend it wasn't him. So for Arjuna to fight during the time of the Guptavas, what did they call that? Akhatvas. During the time of when they were hiding themselves, it wouldn't have been a good policy for them to fight at all. But at this time, he should have fought. Why? Because Lord Krishna instructed Arjuna, you should fight because anyway, you should know that the body is going to be destroyed anyway, but the soul is never destroyed. So you're not actually killing, but I want you to fight in this circumstance. Therefore you should fight. But Swayambhuva Manu is instructing Dhruva Maharaj, you should know that the body is temporary. No one is actually killed. The same philosophy. But you shouldn't be so upset over the death of your brother, because who is a brother? Who is a friend? Who is a mother or father? Everything in this world is temporary and everything is enacted. Prakriti, Srila Prabhupada quotes here. No, Prakriti Kriyamana Ani, material nature is working. So the yakshas shouldn't be blamed. It's not their fault. Well, that's one way of looking at it. That they're simply impelled. The yakshas are impelled by the mentality that they've inherited along with the body. That's one way of looking at it. And that's these philosophical discussions can be quite complex. Who is to blame? In one sense, you could say that, well, just the yakshas, they're yakshas. What do you expect? Dhruva Maharaj's brother, whose name was? Uttam. He was killed, he was trespassing, so you can't blame the yakshas. And Dhruva Maharaj could also say, well, you can't blame me either, because I got angry. What do you expect? But Swayambhuva Manu is bringing, in both cases, in the case of Krishna preaching to Arjuna, and the case of Swayambhuva Manu preaching to Dhruva Maharaj, he's bringing, in both cases, bringing them to a higher platform of consciousness and advising that you act on this higher platform of consciousness, understanding the universal situation. And in both cases also, Dhruva Maharaj and Arjuna were anyway great devotees. And you wouldn't preach to others, you wouldn't preach to them unless they were great devotees anyway. You wouldn't speak to them in this way. To someone who hasn't already imbibed this higher knowledge, there's no use in when someone's really angry and they're on a battlefield and they're ready to fight, or they're completely, in the case of Arjuna, completely disconsolate. In such a case, then, if someone doesn't have a background of this knowledge to speak to them in this way, it won't work. They can't even listen. They can't even hear. But because Dhruv Maharaj and Arjuna both, they know this. What they're being told, they already know it. It's nothing new to them. The way Krishna spoke to Arjuna, it's highly philosophical. And people for thousands of years since then have been trying to work out what it means. So they've been giving different understandings. Some of the language that Krishna uses, especially in the Arjuna himself, he asks Krishna, King Tad Brahma Kim Adhyatma. It's very technical language and very philosophical language. So obviously Arjuna he knew this already. And actually by that point he had already accepted what Saravam Etat Ritang Manye Yang Mang Vadasi Keshava. He had already accepted what Krishna said, and he just after this he wanted more clarification or depth of understanding. But it's this philosophy, it's not for ordinary people, even though it's not actually very difficult to understand. The basic principles are not very difficult to understand. That there is material nature, and everyone in this material world is impelled by material nature due to asadgraha, having accepted this material, that which is temporary, because of accepting it. But actually we don't belong to this material nature, we belong to the spiritual nature. Both the material and spiritual nature are controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore our actual position is not in this material world, we have no actual relationship with it. We belong to the spiritual existence in the service of Krishna. It's not very difficult to understand, actually. It's not a very complex philosophy, although there may be many complex details, no doubt. Just like the nature of Brahma, Paramatma, Bhagavan, this is a somewhat complex detail, for instance. But the basic principles are not difficult to understand, but they are difficult to understand by persons who have not cultivated understanding of this, who have cultivated non-Krishna consciousness or anti-Krishna consciousness since time immemorial. And therefore we understand differently. And it seems to us quite obvious that we are the body. Among devotees we always discuss, we are not the body. Simple truth. The other day Purna Pragya Prabhu was just telling me his realization of this term Srila Prabhupada often used, the simple truth that we are not the body. But for most people, they find it not very simple. They find it very difficult to even begin to understand, because it seems so real that I am this body. When I don't eat for a few hours, I begin to feel hungry. I begin to feel hungry. I can experience it. I can. It's real. It's time for breakfast. We're all experience it, maybe. So we feel it. But then we have to go a little deeper to understand, who am I? Am I the body or am I something else? It seems quite obvious to understand, I am the body. But the simple truth, the example Purna Pragya Prabhu was telling me, which Srila Prabhupada gave so many times, if we think or if we see a photo of ourselves 20 years ago or in our childhood, we see a body, some body that we identified, that was me. We don't say that is me, we say that was me. So the body has completely changed. Even though our mother may recognize the 20-year-old photo of ourselves, we're saying conventionally ourselves, and they'll recognize us now as we are now, but our mother would not expect us to come into the room in a body 20 years as it appeared 20 years ago. We accept that the body is always changing, but that's the point that Krishna makes in Bhagavad Gita, that the body is always changing, and that in itself is proof of the constant nature or eternality of the person who is not the body. The body changes, but the person stays the same. So when the body dies, Krishna says it's his first teaching. When the body dies, the person continues to exist. What's that verse in Bhagavad Gita? Dehino smin yatha dehe kaumaram yobanam tata yatha yatha tata dehantara praptihi. Yes, in three lines the example is given. And then the conclusion that three lines example is given that the body changes from boyhood to youth to old age. And then there's another change called death. It's only another change. It's not the dehi, not the owner of the body, is separate from the body. So therefore, dhiras tatra na muhyati. One who is dhira, one who is sober, one who sees with jnana chakshu, the eye of knowledge, he is not disturbed by this. So Swayambhuva Manu is teaching this to Dhruva, that why have you become so disturbed? Well, why did he become so disturbed if he's a great devotee? Something wrong there, is it? There's something wrong? He became so disturbed that he went out and he wanted to kill all the yakshas. How shall we explain this? Once in Mauritius, after Srila Prabhupada's lecture, one man, Hindu no doubt, he practically started blaspheming Arjuna. He said, it's ridiculous. He said to Prabhupada, that it's ridiculous that this Arjuna, he got this knowledge, and then when his son was killed, he became so angry. He became so angry that he swore either to kill Jayadrath by the end of the next day or to kill himself. So this man was saying that this is, why did he become so disturbed? He should have just said, okay, my son died. Anyway, doesn't matter. But Arjuna became very disturbed, and Krishna, Srila Prabhupada replied, he didn't accept this proposition. He replied that, well, that is natural, because we have relationship with others. This philosophy doesn't, or this understanding doesn't make one cold-hearted. Okay. But naturally we have some relationship, but the fact that Arjuna was fixed in serving Krishna, he didn't give up his duty because of this. He could have said, oh, it's hopeless. That was one of the arguments he gave to Krishna, why we shouldn't fight. Arjuna said to Krishna, what's the use of it? We'll fight and then we'll win and then everyone will be dead, and what's the use of having a kingdom with everyone dead? There's no one to enjoy it with or share it with or show it off to. So if his son's already dead, then you would expect he'd just become totally disheartened and not want to fight, just like Drona. He said, you can't kill me, but in this battle, only if Ashwatthama is killed. When Yudhishthira Maharaj asked Drona before the fight, he went first of all to get blessings from his guru before fighting with him. It's an unusual blessing because before he fights he has to take blessings from his guru. And he's taking blessings to fight with his guru, against his guru. And then he asks, well, how can you be killed? We can't win the battle unless you're killed, and how can you be killed? So Drona said, well, I can be. You can't kill me. Only if Ashwatthama is killed, my son. Then out of disappointment, then only can I be killed. So they asked Ashwatthama, how can you be killed? He said, forget it. I'm not going to be killed. You won't be able to kill me. And actually that's a fact. So Drona, he only was able to be killed when he became distraught, thinking, because he was cheated, that Ashwatthama had been killed. So Arjuna could have reacted in the same way and just become distraught. That's one kind of reaction. But he went on with the fight because Krishna had ordered him after teaching this whole philosophy to Arjuna. It may be also that Dhruva Maharaj, it may have pure devotees, when they interact with this material world, there may be some appearance of being affected by it. That may also be there. In the case of Priyavrata, who was the uncle of Dhruva Maharaj. He was a brahmachari. He wanted to stay a brahmachari. But he became he was forced by heavy duty lineup of Brahma, Manu again. Narad was there, he was neutral. But especially Brahma was pressing Priyavrata. You have to get married. I don't want to get married. I want to be a brahmachari. I want to go back to Godhead and not get entangled in the material world. And Brahma forced him. No, you have to, practically forced him. You have to get married. And what happened after marriage was what Priyavrata had feared. It seemed that he became involved in material life and became absorbed in material life, and he wasn't acting, obviously, as a grihastha and as the overseeing the universe. He wasn't acting like a brahmachari. Grihastha, and especially a king, they have so many social obligations and so many interactions, close interaction with the material energy. So it might appear that Priyavrata, he actually fell down, but one can never fall down by executing the order of a superior, even if it appears that one has fallen down. If Priyavrata had refused to do what Brahma had told him, then he would have been fallen, even though he would have apparently remained a pure brahmachari. If he failed to execute the order of Brahma in that case. Now someone's going to ask me about the four Kumaras. I'll answer that. Then what about the four Kumaras? They also refused. But they went on to become, great devotees. They achieved perfection. What may be possible for some may not be possible for others. Just like there was a case when one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada to take sannyas, and Srila Prabhupada refused and said, you should get married. So he was a brahmachari and he went, now I'll go on and take sannyas. Now I'm doing good as a brahmachari, so time to take sannyas. Prabhupada said, no, you should get married. At least this is what I heard about Radha Ballabha, who was managing the press in Los Angeles. Were you involved in that? Yeah. So this is what I heard. And it's quite likely. Because What is suitable for one person may not be suitable for someone else. So it may appear that someone became more materially entangled, and Srila Prabhupada, I know for sure in the case of Gunarnava Prabhu, he was managing the Krishna Balaram temple as a brahmachari, and he was feeling, I have to deal with money and lawyers and women, and better I get married. And then the sannyasis and brahmacharis were advising him, no, don't get married. Just leave Vrindavan and go and travel and stay a brahmachari. But Srila Prabhupada told him, no, I want you to manage this temple. Get married and manage the temple. Your service is more important than your ashram. So in that service, there may be so many material entanglements or apparently material activities. And one devotee also asked Srila Prabhupada about that, it seems that we're involved in so many material activities, it becomes very difficult to think of Krishna because we have to manage so many things. But Srila Prabhupada confirmed that, well, if we do that in the sense of service to Krishna and the spiritual master, then they will help us. If we all suddenly decide, well, you know, then all this management is maya, so we'll just all chant Hare Krishna, not do anything else. But then we won't be able to chant Hare Krishna because it'll be so much chaos on all. Maybe we will be, the person who's given up his duty might be able to, but unless there's someone else competent to take up that duty, then there'll be so much difficulty caused by the material nature. So someone has to do that. Someone has to take that burden of managing temples, for instance. But by doing so in a spirit of service to Krishna, Srila Prabhupada said that management is archana. So we may think that, well, the pujari is very pure, the temple president is not very pure because he's always talking about money and legal matters. But it's all for the same purpose. What about Arjuna fighting? That doesn't seem very pure. What would be better? Arjuna should go home and do puja and offer flowers to Krishna. But Krishna is standing in front of him and saying, turn your back on me. In puja, you don't turn your back on the deity. But you should have your back on me. And you have to take service from me and tell me what to do, all offenses. And due to you, I'm going to be in a position where I'm having arrows shot at me all the time. Krishna told him, do it. That was Arjuna's worship of Krishna. And that pleased Krishna. Whereas if Arjuna had become a great pujari, giving up the battle, then Krishna wouldn't have been pleased. So what is pleasing to Krishna? That is the bottom line, as they say, or the last word. So I'll make that the last word of this little speech. And if anyone has any questions or comments, please speak now. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. I have something to say about Lord Krishna advising Arjuna to fight, and Swayambhu Manu advising Dhruva Maharaja not to fight.
Yes, please. Sir.
But my humble request is that if I go wrong, you should forgive me, Maharaj.
Well, if you say something grossly wrong, I won't just forgive you, but I'll point out why it's wrong, if Krishna gives me the intelligence to understand these things. Anyway, please say it.
What I feel is, the circumstances under which Krishna advised Arjuna to fight and the circumstances under which Swayambhu Manu asked Dhruva Maharaja to not to fight are different.
Yeah.
In the sense that Arjuna laid down the arms even before the battle of Kurukshetra started. which was not befitting of a kshatriya. So Krishna wanted him to fight. But in the case of Dhruva Maharaja's episode, Swayam Bhuva Manu interfered because Dhruva Maharaja inflicted disproportionate blow on the
Yaksha. He had gone beyond the boundaries of kshatriya duty. That's a good point also. Arjuna had given up, or was proposing to give up his duty as a kshatriya, and Dhruva Maharaj was acting as an ati kshatriya, or too much. He had taken it, the duty of fighting and killing, he had taken it too far. And that should be understood also. Kshatriya, it doesn't mean just some guy in the movie or some big rough guy who just kicks everyone in the head. But who they fight with and how they fight with them, they have, everything is considered on the basis of dharma. They have to consider, they won't fight with anyone and everyone. Work now, samadhi later. Yeah, work now, samadhi later. Yeah, I don't think everyone heard that. Work now, samadhi later. That's the message of Bhagavad Gita. Sarvabhaum Prabhu is advising us. Work now, undergraduate study. Postgraduate Bhagavatam. Yes.
This point about Arjuna getting angry when his son was killed. Apart from natural affection for his son, I think there is also a lot of justification. After all, Abhimanyu was a great devotee.
True, yeah. It's not just that he was killed, but under the circumstances under which he was killed. Yeah. I wonder why Arjuna especially targeted Jayadratha, because he was only part of the, he only had his, but the others, they were directly involved in killing him, and Jayadratha was involved in keeping the armies back from helping him. But of course the Pandavas had a long standing hatred with Jayadratha, which goes long, right the way, right since Karna entered the arena of the, when they were showing their Astra Shakti, when they were boys. And then Karna came in and they didn't know who he was. Right from that time, Jayadratha was always causing a disturbance. Normally Jayadratha, he wouldn't be able to hold back the armies. He wasn't a special fighter, but he had some special benediction which he used at that time. So, Hare Krishna. Anything else you want to say? Hare Krishna. No? You want to say something? Asim Krishna Prabhu? Alright.
Hare Krishna. Many knowledgeable men, they speak about soul.
They speak about?
Soul.
Many people speak about the soul.
Many knowledgeable men, they speak about soul.
Many what? Intelligent men?
Many intelligence and
learned
people. Knowledgeable men, they speak about soul, but they have no realization about soul. They predictably that they have understanding, but practical they do not know their soul. So when and how they can realize.
How can we realize that we are actually souls? Well, we have to engage in bhakti yoga and then we act as souls. That is realization. Simply to say aham brahmasmi, that's theoretical. That when we engage in the service of Krishna, then we act as souls. That is the activity of the soul, to act in the service of Krishna. So when we act in bhakti yoga, then that is the beginning of realization. You have a film that helps to establish the difference between the beginning. What's it called?
Spark of life.
Spark of life. Yeah.